Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a TVO podcast.
Welcome to On Docs, a podcast about documentaries and the stories they tell. I'm Colin Ellis.
And I'm Nam Kiwanuka. Hey, Colin, so how are you holding out?
I'm doing well. My cat is trying to take over your co-hosting gig, but I've told him many times no, he's not ready for prime time just yet. But yeah, that's me. How about you?
I'm okay. I'm holding up. Looking forward to the warm weather and my birthday month, which is in May. So I'll send you a list of things that I would love to get for my birthday. I'm kidding. Right, you don't have to give me anything.
I'll get right on that.
So what documentary are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to be looking at a short doc called What Are You?, which explores the experiences of 11 mixed-race Canadians.
One of my grandparents told one of my parents, don't have kids because your kids are going to look like aliens.
I've never felt that I could say that I am black. However, that is completely different from what people perceive me as or describe me as.
In the span of one day and like a 20-minute drive, I could go from being seen as white to be seen as black.
Has anyone ever asked you that question, what are you?
So many times. And when I'm feeling cheeky, I say, I'm human. But other times, when I'm trying to understand where they're coming from, I ask, what do you mean? Do you want to hear a story of how I once made a small child cry?
Nam, are you scaring children again?
I know. That's my other job. No. A few years ago, I was in Uganda and I was working with an aid agency and I was filming for them. So we went into a village outside of Kampala, maybe 4 hours. And when we approached this family's home, they were in front of the house. And then this little girl looked at me. And then she started yelling, Muzungu, Muzungu. Muzungu means white person in Swahili. And she cried and then ended up running back into the house. I was the whitest person she had ever seen. And in that moment, you know, I was kind of heartbroken because I'm from Uganda. And so I was saying, you know, my name is Namugeni. And, you know, but it was interesting how on the other side, you know, how, you know, there are people who are very much afraid of people with fair skin.
Well, you know, that question of what are you, you know, it comes up in this film, and obviously it's the name of the doc we're going to be talking about, and it's from director Richard Pierre. And we have him on with a woman in the film named Gina Marie, who is also the founder of Mixed in the Six, which is a group that brings together mixed race people. So let's go hear that conversation. Well, Richard and Gina, thank you so much for joining me today on Docs.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Well, I guess we should probably all kind of identify ourselves. I mean, we're all mixed race people, but maybe we could just talk about our own backgrounds. Maybe Richard, if you want to start us off.
Sure. I don't know. What's my background? My mom's from Trinidad. My dad's from Canada. So if you go into the whole racial thing, I'm part black, part white, and according to a DNA test I took as part of this film process, part indigenous South American. So still trying to figure out that part of the ancestry. So I have to do some researching.
But Eugenia.
Yeah, so I am mixed Filipino-Canadian. My mom is from the Philippines, from Northern Luzon. My dad is, he identifies as Canadian. He's white. He is adopted by my grandparents who say that they're Scottish, although the Ode's last name, which is my last name, is English. So I'm not sure if they really know. And then I also, similar to Richard, did a DNA test, Ancestry DNA, and turns out my dad's background is pretty much equals like Welsh and French with like some Icelandic and, you know, other little 1% here and there that I'm not really sure how to track, but that's been an interesting, more of a recent discovery, because I just did, my dad did his DNA test and I did my DNA test sort of in the last few years, just after Mix in the Six was co-founded. So it's been an interesting journey.
And well, for myself, you know, I identify as mixed race, but I always like to say that I'm black biracial. So my dad is black and my mom's white, and his parents were from Jamaica and Barbados respectively. And my mom is she's got English on her mom's side, and I guess probably Swiss or Irish on her dad's side. I'm not really sure about that side of the family, but when that question comes up, what are you? And that's the title of your film, Richard. Do you hate that question? Do you love that question? What response do you usually give when people say that to you?
Yeah, I mean, my personal feelings about that question are that I don't like it. It fills me with dread and anxiety when people ask that question, because a lot of the time when it's asked, it's like a complete stranger. And oftentimes it's like the first question they ask you, and they're not really interested in having a conversation with you so much as like satisfying their curiosity. So yeah, I don't like that question in general. However, when a mixed person asks that question of me, I have a different reaction. And I think that's because I tend to think it's coming from a different place. It's coming from, I'm trying to understand that you are like me and I just want to know if I'm right.
Yeah, similarly, well, so growing up, I got that question all the time. I grew up in a small town north of Toronto where pretty much everyone was white except for me and a handful of other people, including my brother and sister, visibly Caucasian. And it always just felt very othering. Like I felt no different than anyone else, but hearing that was just kind of a constant reminder that I appeared differently to others. And that was always a kind of a perplexing experience, because being mixed race, identity is something that's quite confusing from the early stages. And so when you're constantly asked a question that sort of puts you in a distance from everyone else, like, what are you? Where are you from? It was a little disheartening. I got used to it over the years. Now when people ask me that, I do kind of feel like it's an opportunity to have a conversation about, well, I'm a human being. And but I think what you're asking is, what's my, you know, heritage and ethnic background? And then I'll kind of get into it. And similar to what I shared in the film, what are you? I think depending on the rapport that I have with someone, or the vibe, if it's sort of genuine curiosity, or if it's like an interrogative, investigative question, like, I need to know what you are and where you're from, because some people have a bit of a, and they take like an investigative journalism must know kind of answer, like vibe. I might just kind of stop it there. So it depends. And I think when I'm in mixed race spaces, oftentimes where a lot of folks, and myself included, are asking like, what's your mix? Like, what about you? Like, it definitely has a different energy. So, yeah.
I have a complicated relationship with that question as well, because I think, you know, like you said, when it's asked by someone who's mixed race, or, you know, especially when it's like a stranger, it kind of can come off as a little jarring. But when it's someone who's, I guess, of a similar background as you, you can sort of understand where they're coming from. When I've been asked that question, it was usually when I was probably in high school and in my college years, because I had a much bigger afro back then, and I was a little more visibly, I guess, racially ambiguous. And then when I turned 28, 29, around that age, my hair started to fall, I started to lose my hair a little bit. So I was no longer as racially ambiguous, because I decided to shave my head, and I looked like just like any other bald white guy. And phenotypically, you know, I think I look more white than I do black. So oftentimes I don't really get asked that question, and I kind of miss it in a weird way. It's strange. Like, it's like you don't know what you're missing until it's gone, right? Like, on the one hand, you're like, oh, well, I don't really like when, you know, people ask me that. But at the same time, when they stop asking me, it feels like a bit of a loss. Well, I guess, Richard, we should ask you about your film, because what are you? I remember, I think you and I talked about it when we first met a few years ago. And this is, I think, your first doc?
Yeah, it's my first doc. And I always like to say that I was really lazy and I decided to do the easiest documentary possible, which was one on being mixed race, because I'm mixed race. So therefore, I'm already an expert. But yeah, I still had to do a ton of research. It wasn't as easy as a process as I would have hoped. But yeah, it's a 20-minute doc where I interview 11 different people and sort of get their perspective on what it's like being racially mixed in a society that does have a complicated relationship with race.
I guess what made you kind of think about like turning it into a documentary? And I know, because I know you've done a lot of short films, so I wonder why you thought documentary was the best format for this.
Yeah, I mean, I've always wanted to make a documentary. Like for years, I've come up with a bunch of different ideas, and I always just sort of struggled with the idea that if you start a documentary, how do you know when you get to the end? I feel like it could be like something you spend your lifetime working on. So again, I went to sort of the mixed race identity thing, and I thought I could tell a, you know, cohesive short story that would appeal to audiences. I think the real, if there was a moment in time that really inspired it, I watched a great documentary at TIFF, I think 2017, maybe. It was I'm Not Your Negro. That came out, and I was just like floored. That documentary really hit me. And then I was talking with some filmmakers at TIFF, and it all sort of came out of that. And I was like, I need to make a documentary. I need to do it now. And it's going to be about being mixed. And yeah, I just felt like I felt really drawn to the subject matter. And I don't know why I hadn't thought of it sooner.
Well, Gina, you're in the film, and I'm curious to know why you decided to take part in it.
I mean, you know, when the universe and the stars align and something comes to you and you're like, I have to do this. I mean, I could, that was really it. I have a bit of a story, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but I do remember introducing the two of you at a Mix in the Six event like a number of years ago. Is this?
You did, yes.
Yeah, so this is very cool. This is all coming full circle. Well, so Richard, I remember meeting you there, and when you said, I'm going to make this documentary, I'm determined no matter, you know, what I do. And I remember saying to myself, of course, you have to get behind this. And when I had the opportunity to put in my story, there was a part of me that thought, maybe I don't have a story to tell. maybe I've already done all these things in the mixed community by running events, and there's not much there. And then I realized that was also a part of this pattern of like hiding myself, you know, and kind of a pattern of coping to just kind of blend in and just be happy and not actually say anything about what was really under the surface about my own identity and my own evolution as a mixed race person. So I felt this was something that was calling to me, and it was just an incredible experience to be a part of the film. And I'm really thankful for Richard for giving me that opportunity, because when I've heard feedback from folks who have seen the film, even people in my own family, they were like, I didn't know that you felt that way. So
it came as a surprise.
Yeah. I had a cousin on my dad's side reach out to me because he saw the film on TVO, and he shared what he, you know, what he got from watching the film and seeing my perspective, and really appreciating how, you know, someone in his own family might not have felt fully accepted or fully seen. And that was something that really moved him. So, you know, you never know who you're going to help by sharing your story, even if you don't think your story is that important, but it was important. So, well, that was really
I think we all have interesting stories to share when it comes to a mixed identity. Like there's just, it's such a, I think, undermined topic. Like people haven't explored it enough yet. So.
Well, I want to ask you about this opening scene where this young woman who's mixed race says that her parents were told that the grandparents.
One of my grandparents told one of my parents, don't have kids because your kids are going to look like aliens.
And that just seems like such a cruel thing to say to somebody. especially someone you love, you know, who's thinking about having children. And I wonder what you two think of just the ways that mixed race children evoke such a strong emotions. Maybe Richard, you could start us off.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an interesting subject that a lot of families sort of struggle with, because I mean, there's a lot of racism in our culture, and it's just, I don't know, like even just watching that Meghan Markle interview where we're talking, I mean, we have to talk about that. I mean,
yeah,
we're talking about, like,
I think you're right.
We don't want your kid to be brown, basically, because that's not good for our family. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, my own grandmother was on my father's side, was definitely a racist person.
I think, you know, I wanted to ask Gina, though, I mean, because you mentioned you had a cousin who didn't know you had this kind of experience growing up. So, and that came as a surprise to them. I'm wondering, you know, just, you know, growing up, though, I mean, what was it kind of like for you, you know, half Filipino, half white? Like, what was sort of like, I guess, your experience like?
Well, I definitely can share that a common experience for a lot of mixed people, which I think you've highlighted, Colin, too, is that how we present to people in our life changes as we move forward throughout the lifespan. So growing up, I appeared very Asian to people. So I was treated as such. And then as I got older, I sort of became looking more, people think I look more Spanish or Latina, and people would respond to me differently in that way. And then now I hear from people that they think I'm like white, which is very interesting. So that's just something I want to highlight, that growing up, it was a lot more, I was a lot more identifiable as like different from other people. And that was very struggle for me in school, because I was made fun of for this. In my own family, I didn't experience much sort of microaggressions on either side, just that I kind of felt different because I appeared to look different than everyone else, especially on my, the white side of my family, but nobody ever talked about it. it wasn't something that was brought up, which I always kind of wonder if it's, was this a good or bad thing? And I think feeling like I was an other, especially as a child and in school, and having experiences of, you know, sort of microaggressions and sort of the subtle racism that kind of bleed through small towns. I didn't have a conversation about you know, racism or race with my family until this past year. Thanks to the film, actually, my parents watched it when it was streaming in Canada for the first time. And I think that's something to highlight. I know we were kind of talking about like mixed race children and babies, but I think, like, you know, babies all grow up to be adults. and I'm, you know, 35 years old, and I just had a conversation with my dad about, you know, why didn't we talk about race in our family? Because it was something that affected me. And my dad said, he's like, you know, I'm sorry. When I look at you, I just saw myself. I just saw you were my daughter. He didn't see me as anything else differently, or that I was an other to him or other to others. And so interesting, because I think now we have Meghan Markle, who is a mixed race woman, married to, you know, arguably one of the more famous people on the planet, Prince Harry, having these like very, very real conversations about what happens in families like all over the world. And especially here in North America, where mixed race families, you know, have been popping up for a little while now, and making it a topic of discussion. And I'll just add one more thing, because of Mixed in the Six, I've seen some conversations come up online and through folks that are part of the community that have been pretty affected and even triggered by the conversation between Oprah, Prince Harry, and Meghan Markle, that they also recall or remember hearing comments being made of their own family members about the color of their skin when they were children, you know, worries that parents or grandparents or, you know, aunts and uncles were worried that they were going to come out darker, or how they were going to come out, or otherwise. So it's really interesting to see these conversations coming forward, you know, thanks to Meghan Markle and thanks to Richard's film. So
it's funny too. Like I have an interesting relationship with my father, but we did not talk about me being mixed and like sort of how that affected me growing up until the film was done. Like, I just really weird relationship, but we don't really have like deep conversations right off the bat, but the only reason he actually, I think, brought up the film was I think I maybe had like a link in my email signature about the film and we started talking about it. And it was like the first time we'd ever talked about the fact that, you know, this was weird and we never talked about it. And so, yeah, it was an interesting conversation as a result of like making the film, actually having a conversation with my dad for the first time about race and what it meant to have a biracial child, like growing up in the US and Canada.
Is there something that you wish, and Gina, you can answer this as well, is there something you wish your parents had said to you back then that you would have helped you?
Anything?
Anything.
Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, I mean, that really kind of sums it up. I mean, I think parents have a responsibility to talk to their kids about this. I mean, I know people want to think that, you know, we're going to have some mixed kids and it's going to end racism, but that's not how reality works. I mean, there's so much racism ingrained in our society that I think from like practically age, I think it was age 3 was sort of like the earliest I'd read that people or children start to understand race. So yeah, I think those conversations need to happen almost immediately. And the conversations need to happen with extended family members. Like, you really need to start talking about race probably even before the kid's born, because you don't want to have these comments about, you know, how brown will the baby look or whatever it might be. But yeah, having at least one conversation probably would have been nice.
Yeah. And I want to just also highlight, I think my parents are, I love you guys. If you're listening, you did a great job. They only were working with what they knew. And I don't think my parents had the lexicon and the information to talk about race with me. So really anything would have been great. Like instead of, you know, sticks and stones may break your bones, but names will never hurt you. When someone was calling me, you know, chink on the schoolyard. I mean, like anything deeper than that would have been a good, a good start. I think now, and I've got this from, I've learned this from doing the, you know, multiracial mixed race community work, is there's so many more resources and books out there around parenting and how to have conversations with children about race, which is really beautiful and heartening, because that's what we really need. And race isn't, you know, it's a social construct, but it doesn't mean it doesn't affect our lives. And it's still affecting our lives. It's racism is still alive and well, and it's an important thing to not brush under the rug. So I'm, you know, my parents, they did the best that they could. The apology from my dad was really something. I cried, I think like 2 weeks later of joy. Like in the moment I was like, thanks dad. Thank you. And then like 2 weeks later I processed it in real time on an interview on the podcast. But you know, they did the best they can. And now parents of mixed race children, you know, have a lot more tools. So I think for anyone who is listening out there to really seek those out and watch the film, you know, listen to podcasts. There's lots of information out there to support people in having those conversations with their children.
Yeah, I can sort of relate, because I don't feel like I recall there being a lot of books and certainly no pop culture that, you know, represented their mixed race experience. The closest I could think of was Lawrence Hill's book, Blackberry Sweet Juice, which came out, I think, when I was in college. And that was the first time I'd actually read a book that was about being specifically black, like black, half black, half white, because that's what Larry Hill's background is. And I don't know if I would have, how my experience would have changed if I had more explicit conversations around with race with my parents. I think we talked about it, but I don't, for some reason, I'm blanking on it, what those discussions were about. And like I said, you know, my experience like was probably a little different from you two in the sense that I didn't really get a lot of racial slurs thrown my way. I was pretty lucky in that regard. I got mulatto once, I got half breed once, but it was kind of like said in ignorance, not out of like maliciousness. And I don't know. I think one thing I always sort of struggled with was because I'm black, but I don't look visibly black. I never experienced the kind of racism that I think a lot of black folks face. And when I was in spaces that were all white and I was having an argument with someone about race, it was hard for me to like draw upon my own experience in those conversations, right? Because someone I would talk to someone who'd just be like, well, race, you know, like, what does it matter? Like, we're all the same. And I would have a really hard time, like struggle with articulating why it is this person was wrong. And I couldn't really use my own experience. I'd never really experienced racism. I don't know if Richard, you can relate or Gina, but that was something that I definitely remember having a hard time with.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like for me, I have sort of had racially charged incidents growing up. So I guess, well armed for those conversations. But yeah, I mean, it's weird when you don't necessarily present as, because I'm fairly light, I can pass, I think, a lot of times for Spanish as opposed to black. So it depends on, like, you know, if I have my afro or if I have my longer hair, then I think it's more clear that I'm part black. But I always feel well armed from my experiences to have the conversation, even if that person might deny my existence for what it is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think, you know, like, the other thing too is I also felt in certain circumstances, like, because I don't present as black, I would often feel like, I didn't have a full appreciation of the black experience to some extent. And even things like, you know, when the N-word gets dropped in a rap song, and I used to love hip hop, should I say it or should I just not say it? Like, I would always have those mental gymnastics going through my head at the time. Now it's kind of like, you know, I've just accepted it. And when someone's like, well, you don't look black, I kind of grit my teeth and be like, all right, fine. normally I'm just kind of like, you know, I don't hide it. I always kind of tell people, especially when I'm first meeting them and getting to know them, you know, I always mention that, I'm biracial, and it's never something I've ever felt like I've had to hide, and certainly wouldn't. So I don't know.
If I may, growing up, I definitely, like I had described earlier in the interview, I experienced a lot of that sort of tense microaggressions, walking into rooms feeling like, you know, at any point someone could say something, and most often that they did. Although growing up, that definitely reduced. And I can't speak to the black experience or the mixed black experience whatsoever. But I want to say that it's been a really beautiful journey listening to the stories of mixed black folks on the podcast, really understanding how, or getting a sort of a glimpse of what that's like for people, because we just don't know. I think for me growing up, I thought I was like a victim of racism. And then I was like, oh no, it hasn't happened to me at all. And then realizing that, you know, being black in this world is very much a unique experience that not everybody can understand and appreciate. And something, I hope this makes sense, it's something that I'm really appreciating doing this work in the community, is just because I'm mixed race and I've experienced some hints of racism and microaggressions doesn't mean that I know what it's like to be mixed black or like a, you know, fully racialized person in this world, because my whiteness does protect me. And even my, you know, being Filipino and Asian, you know, if we want to lump myself into the model minority ish, you know, protects me as well. And so this is a part of, it's funny, there's the mental gymnastics of how to respond to questions like, what are you? But then there's also this mental gymnastics, like internally, of being like, what is my identity? And how can understanding my identity and how I show up in spaces help myself be a better human and appreciate the struggles of other people who are racialized and from, you know, other BIPOC communities? Because that's, I think, where we're headed as a society, is we all are affected by race, and we all should be thinking about how we can be more sensitive to each other's experiences and curious about making changes in the way that we ask questions, the way that we treat other people. And I feel like I'm kind of going on a bit of like a philosophy tangent, but
that's okay. We're cool with philosophy.
Yeah, here. I think it's just kind of highlighting that this is the multiracial experience is a unique one, and I think it's, you know, being multiracial doesn't mean we are going to solve racism, but we can be a part of making things better if we want to, because we can kind of take our experiences and be like, okay.
I think this is a kind of a good opportunity to pivot to what you do with Mixed in the Six, Gina, because you know, this was a event you co-founded a few years ago, and I went to probably the second party you guys threw, and honestly it was the first time I think I can remember ever being in a room with everyone in the room was mixed race. Like, maybe there was one person who wasn't. And I was just astounded by it. And yeah, maybe you could just tell us a bit about what kind of went into the thinking behind creating Mixed in the Six.
Yeah. Thanks for asking. It was, so all of the experiences that I've had growing up and that I've shared so far really were the inspiration for creating, you know, Mixed in the Six. I have also been a part of the Mixed Students Association at York many moons ago. And really it was around creating a space where, you know, myself and other mixed people could connect and share stories and create a sense of community with each other, because so many of us grew up not feeling fully seen in who we are and able to have the conversations that we say we wanted to have with our families. Like you said, Colin, like the first time you were in a room with other mixed race people was, you know, just a few years ago. You know, how else are we going to find each other? You know, there's like, I often refer to this, like at York University, there was like two Chinese students associations, two Black student association. The Jewish student association was like massive. They had like two washrooms in their office, but there was no mixed race student association, which, we know was, I was a part of leading for a good while. And, you know, there isn't just like a, you know, mixed hub of hangouts like to go to, like there's a Spanish speaking, you know, cultural center in your neighborhood, for instance. Right. So it was really responding to a need to create those spaces for ourselves. And Mixed in the Six was co-founded by myself and Han Palkuchang after we met in 2016. And yeah, we just wanted to create and produce events that would bring people together, create friendships, create a sense of understanding and cohesion amongst mixed race people in Toronto. And we had a lot of fun. And then, you know, life happened. So the two of us got super busy, and then right when I was starting to make plans to start doing events again, sort of with sort of a new, you know, new energy, COVID hit. And then I was like, let's do a podcast. So the podcast is continuing our, you know, mission, which is the sharing stories and building community with mixed folks in Toronto, and having conversations and learning from one another. Because, you know, I think, like sort of Richard alluded to earlier, like, you know, I'm just, because we're mixed, we're not experts on being mixed, but we can become more compassionate and aware by hearing people's stories and listening and really getting what other people have been through and seeing the similarities and differences. And that's what the podcast and the community to me is all about, is learning.
Well, we have to wrap up our conversation, but I'd like to ask both of you, and maybe Richard, you can start us off, just I guess what you've learned about the mixed race experience since you started this project, however many moons ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think if I was to think of one thing, it would be that being mixed is not just one thing. People change how they racially identify through the course of their life, through where they're geographically located. There's just so many factors in, I guess, creating that identity. For example, like if I was back in a small town, I would be probably 100% identify myself as Black, versus, you know, living in Toronto, I can safely identify as a multiracial Black person, because I don't know, it's just, it's a different landscape. It's not hopefully as polarized, but it also depends on where you are, even in Toronto, and you might change how you racially identify. So I think that is really interesting that, you know, not everyone thinks of themselves as Black or as mixed race or as, it's just, there's a gamut of experiences. I mean, there's a lot of, let's say, light-skinned Black people who will, or light-skinned Black people who are mixed race who will completely identify purely as Black and there's no conversation beyond that. And then there's people who might look really dark and describe themselves as mixed. So it's, it really is a gamut of experiences.
What about you, Gina?
Oh, so what have I learned? Well, everything Richard said, and that, you know, I think that it's okay to not have all the answers about, you know, not about having, about my own identity. Like, that's something that's always developing, as Richard said. And then also for me, sitting with the discomfort of not knowing all the answers about race and identity and multiracial history, and letting that drive me forward to be more curious of how we can just make change, right? And I think I sometimes struggle a bit with being sort of this face of this, you know, little organization. It's not really an organization. We're really just a community, but I need to have all the answers about how to like solve racism, which I know is like, I'm like, where am I getting this? But I think what I'm trying to say is that being in this position and being multiracial, we have this really cool opportunity to be a bridge between our different heritages, between like white and racialized, white and Black. And I think that if we want to, this is an opportunity to make an impact, to share our stories and be a part of creating a like documented history of what mixed race identity is. And I think, you know, Richard beautifully did with his film, and there's other films being created now. And even with like the many podcasts, ours included, we're able to step into this confusion of being mixed, but make it into something beautiful and educational where other people will be able to learn from the things that that we share.
Well, is there anything you guys would like to plug? Any projects that you're working on? Where can people find you?
People can find me at richardbpierre.com. And yeah, I got a lot of projects on the go, but I know the clock is ticking. So I'll just say go to richardbpierre.com and check it out.
Yeah. And you probably best just to follow us on Instagram or Facebook, Mixed in the Six. And six is spelled with an S-I-X. We also have a Patreon for our bonus episodes for the podcast, patreon.com/mixedinthesix. And then you can catch the podcast by the same name on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like.
Great. Well, thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate you joining me today.
Thanks for
having
us.
That was Richard Pierre, director of What Are You? And Gina Marie, the founder of Mixed in the Six. You know, something we talked about was that Oprah interview with Meghan Markle and Prince Harry about a month ago. And, you know, Meghan talked about just how someone in the royal family was voicing concerns over what their child's skin tone was going to look like. How did you react to that part of their interview?
I wasn't surprised, but I mean, it says something that you're concerned about the color of the child instead of, is the child going to be healthy? Is the mother going to be healthy? You'd think those are the things that should be at the front of your mind. But, you know, as a child, some of my family rejected me because of how fair my skin was and that I had blue eyes, which have morphed into something else. But yeah, I had an auntie who would call me devil. So if there are these, you know, I wish we could talk more about how I wish we could talk more about that stuff. You know, it's not surprising. I think there are stories upon stories about that.
Yeah, I guess I was pretty lucky because, you know, when I was born, my mother said to the nurse, you know, his skin is yellow. And she thought, well, maybe it's his skin color. He's Black. Maybe it's his skin color turning. He's like, no, he actually has jaundice.
Sorry,
and she was like, no, he's mixed. It's just his skin tone. No, he's like, no, it's jaundice.
You're right. Fine, and it's I guess it's like a learning curve, right? Because you know, I've had people ask me, where did you get your eyes from? I'm like, I don't know. Like, why are you, I feel interrogated. I didn't steal them. I was born with these eyes. So, but I mean, now you look fine.
Well, thank you. Yes. Well, yeah, I've tried to, I've aged okay, I guess, but you know, growing up for me, it wasn't such a concern the way I looked in terms of people thinking, oh, is he too light or is he too dark? And I think that's just because I was, you know, very lucky to grow up with two very loving parents, very loving family, grew up in a very diverse neighborhood, you know, so I was, yeah, like I said, just kind of a privileged in that respect. But I wondered, you know, from like, because you have two children, and you know, I just wonder, you know, in terms of having conversations about race, what's it like talking to them about that?
We've been having these conversations since they were very small. And my one day my daughter said, I'm white and you're white and my brother is brown and so is my dad. And I sat down with her and we had a conversation and she didn't understand, you know, she's like, my skin is, you know, fair. She identified as what her skin color was. So we've been talking about those conversations, and you know, even with my brother, she'll look at my brother and say, "Well, he's not black; he's brown." Hmm. And for kids, this stuff is really—I always tell my kids that they're smarter than adults. Like when we become adults, we just become so many things bear us down, and we don't have the same kind of curiosity as children. And she complains that there's no crayon that matches her skin color or her brother's. So I talk about where we're from, about our culture, about our ethnic background. I tell her that we have family from East Africa, family from Wales, Scotland, and Ghana. And she should be proud of all of those backgrounds and all of those ethnicities because they've made her who she is. So I don't shy away from talking about it. I've talked to them about Black Lives Matter. I've talked to them about, you know, celebrating their cultures, about names. So I feel like information is power. And I also don't know, I want to talk about it. We keep hearing that it's uncomfortable to talk about race and it makes me crazy. Why is it uncomfortable? We should be talking, yes, race is a social construct, but we should be talking about the diversity of different cultures. We should celebrate that. And we should have those difficult conversations. If it's a difficult conversation of understanding that people with darker skin get treated differently than people with lighter skin, have that conversation. I've had that conversation with my kids and said, you know, because you have privilege, and I hate saying light skin privilege because it sounds so gross, but that's essentially what it's called, you know, because you have lighter skin, you're not going to be treated the same way as your cousins who have darker skin. I want them to be aware of that, and I want them to push back on that. And kids want to know these things. And if we push it away, you know, what are we telling them?
Why do you think it's gross?
Because it's saying, it's elevating a skin color as being above others. I understand the idea behind it, and that's why I tell my kids that because you have, your skin is lighter, you are going to be treated differently. People are going to be, are not going to be, even when you look in the systems, systemically, you're not going to face the same, even like, I'll talk about hair, simple thing as hair. My daughter has very fine hair and it's very long and part of it is blonde. People are always talking about, oh my, her hair is amazing. She's got good hair. Good hair, what do you mean? And then her cousin, who's the same age as her, has thick afro hair, and they don't say the same thing to her. And kids notice those things and they become self-conscious of those things. And so you're elevating one thing above another. Why are you doing that? You know? So that's why I don't, when we say light skin privilege, it just kind of makes me cringe. I think there's a way of explaining what's happening without saying light skin privilege. It sounds like you're better because you have light skin. And I know that's how you're treated in society, but I don't know if that's what we should call it.
Yeah, actually, you just reminded me something when I was a kid. And I said I grew up pretty privileged, but I actually, for a while, maybe a year or so, I called my dad, who's black, by his first name.
Ooh.
And
you're still alive?
Yes, my parents still kept me around, even though I was very disrespectful. And I think, you know, I think at the time what I said to them was because he doesn't look like me, or he doesn't have the same skin color as me. Now, I eventually grew out of it, but it was just something, you know, kids are very literal, you know, like you mentioned with your daughter and looking at the crayons, you know, like when you say black to them, like they assume like the color black, right? And obviously a lot of black people, you know, there are very dark skinned black people, but there are a lot of black folks who are brown, like my dad is brown and you're brown, but you know, like it's something that kids are
they don't have the time for it. They're very precise.
Yeah, they're very precise, and that's why I think it's better. I think it's good that we live in a more, I think there's more information now than there used to be, especially when we were kids, you know, like I think we were kind of like the first, maybe part of the first multiracial generation in a way, because I don't know if there were as many interracial families as there is now, but certainly back when I was growing up, probably not as many, although I think I grew up in a pretty diverse part of Toronto, so I saw it more.
Yeah, it's great that we're living during a time when we have more information, but I also worry because people keep saying that, you know, the more people from different backgrounds, the more they have kids of, you know, different backgrounds, like mixed ethnicity, then racism will be solved. And it's not that simple, I don't think, because I think people will find something to, you know, maybe if you're brown hair and blue eyes, then you're not as special as somebody who has. There's always something, but I think we have to talk about these things and we have to stop saying they're uncomfortable. They're there. And you and I, we are both light-skinned, and I'm sure, I know when I travel to certain places, I can blend in, and I don't feel as stressed out as being in certain environments than my relatives with darker skin, because they can't just, you know, pull their hair back and pretend not to be, you know, pretend not to be black in order to feel safe. So that's unfair. And that's why I have those conversations with my kids, because this is how the world is shaped. And hopefully it will change, but by not talking about it, it doesn't make it go away. And we all should be celebrating who we are as people. I know it sounds simplistic, but I grew up a lot as a kid. I was very ashamed of who I was because I didn't fit in anywhere. And so I don't want my kids to have those same experiences.
And that's the podcast. You can watch What Are You on TVO.org.
While you're here, why not give us a rating on Apple Podcasts and tell a friend about us? It helps new listeners to find the show.
You can follow me on Twitter at ColinEllis81.
And you can follow me at Namshine, all one word.
Thanks to producer and editor Matthew O'Mara, senior producer Katie O'Connor, production support coordinators Nikki Ashworth and Jonathan Hollowell, and executive producer Laurie Few.
Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you at the next screening.